second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. You know, just to conclude that point, can you see how it might be a problem if you can propagandize people like we have, like we've seen or like we've been over the last 100 years or so in Bernaysian fashion, so to speak, hardwiring Uncle Sigmund Freud's nonsense to Madison Avenue marketing? You know, Edward Bernays worked for multinational corporations like Johnson & Johnson. He worked for the American government, worked for the United States military. American government is disingenuous. United States government. And so if you can propagandize people, and we also know the Reese Committee proved, you know, Catherine Casey went to the Carnegie Endowment for International So-Called Peace. And with her dictaphone, recorded the initial meeting minutes of the Carnegie Endowment, and it was discovered that from the very inception of the so-called Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, right from the beginning of its creation, that was 1910, so 108 years ago, right from the beginning, they were trying to change life in America, radically alter life in America. This is what Catherine Casey recorded. And, you know, according to G. Edward Griffin, it so shocked her, this discovery, because she was a patriot like everybody, you know. And she was sort of a plant on the committee, as the story goes, wondering why they were doing this to this wonderful philanthropic organization. Why are you trying to subvert these great, wonderful organizations? And she showed up and discovered that from the very beginning, from the very outset of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, a foreign policy think tank, they were trying to radically alter life in America. And they decided that the best way to do that, in contravention to what you read, organizational history, you go to the Wikipedia entry for the Carnegie Endowment establishment. Andrew Carnegie, like other leading internationalists of his day, believed that war could be eliminated by stronger international laws and organizations. Controlling people. You know, one guy like Andrew Carnegie. "I am drawn more to this cause than to any," he wrote in 1907. Carnegie's single largest commitment in this field was his creation of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Okay, so you hear that, but then in the early 50s, as the Reese Committee was investigating, the discovery is made from the Carnegie Endowment's own meeting minutes that they're trying to radically alter life in America in the most effective way, ironically, in contravention to those words from Andrew Carnegie, the most effective way they settled on to change, to radically alter life in a society is war, in a perpetual state of war, because you can justify getting people to act irrationally. Well, normally we wouldn't do this, but, you know, it's a state of war. So again, doesn't that sound like what James Madison said? "In time of actual war, great discretionary powers constantly given to the executive magistrate. Constant apprehension of war has the same tendency to render the head too large for the body." And what have we seen? People don't realize the concept of the Pentagon, a defense budget, so-called defense. What's defensive about it? There's nothing defensive about it. It's offensive in nature. Where does $717 billion disclosed dollars, not to mention black budget, where does it go? The ships are already built. The planes are already built. The missiles are already. Where does $717 billion go? I ask rhetorically, what about the trillions that we spent overseas in the Middle East in campaigns that are so old that now the Trump administration doesn't even want to report on it anymore? Now we're not going to talk about Afghanistan anymore because it's been so long, no one cares. longer than all of the actual wars America has ever fought, all combined. And Obama won a Nobel Peace Prize for his continuation and extension of this protracted, conflicts of aggression. They're not officially declared wars. And now Trump picked up where Obama left off. You know, Obama was responsible for the drone strike that killed Anwar al-Awlaki and his teenage son, and Trump came in and immediately, killed, I think his, what was it, Anwar al-Awlaki's 8-year-old daughter? And they were all American citizens. And did they ever, were they accused of a crime? You know, Anwar al-Awlaki, at best you could call him a pamphleteer. He was an ideologue. What was his crime? Was he ever convicted? Was he ever accused of a crime? Was he ever convicted? Sentenced? And we just keep blowing through these mile markers to tyranny on our way to where? Anyway, getting back on track, hopefully that all makes sense. You know, a straight line from James Madison's warning, particularly at the Constitutional Convention in 1787, through the uncivil war and the Reconstruction era to the Senate Report 93-549, Emergency Power Statutes, Provisions of Federal Law Now in Effect, delegating to the executive extraordinary authority in time of national emergency. Why repeal the national emergency when you got all these powers? It was actually thousands, again, I repeat. They narrowed it down to 470, but it was thousands that they identified. To the Bush 2 administration's update and reissue of the National Emergency Powers CRS report, 98-505, a week after 9/11, September 18, 2001, pointing to Senate Report 93-549, hey, the Senate did some great work. And they found these 470 provisions of law. This is great stuff that gives the president extraordinary power. That's pretty awesome. 1973, a Senate special committee studied emergency powers, published a compilation identifying some 470 provisions of federal law delegating to the executive extraordinary authority in time of national emergency. The vast majority of them are of the standby kind, dormant until activated by the president. However, formal procedures for invoking these authorities, accounting for their use and regulating their activation and application were established a while ago by the National Emergencies Act of 1976, which again, you know, so I guess, you know, National Emergencies Act of 1976, we'd have to put that in there too. And, you know, I mean, in true Orwellian fashion, the Bush administration, Bush 2, goes into right, you know, very next, the emergency concept. What is a national emergency? Let's talk about it. You know, it's almost like the CIA is trying to suicide you. They got that fancy little mechanism that can make it look like you shot yourself in the head. And they're saying, let's talk about suicide. What is suicide? I don't know about you. That's how it feels to me. I digress. So you do that and you skip again forward to FM3-07 Stability Operations, the Army's field manual published October 2008, and Chapter 1, The Strategic Context, The American Experience with Stability. You know? During the Reconstruction following the Civil War, military forces maintained order. I mean, the Army is telling us how this has worked. So let's come full circle to the point and stop wasting time, shall we? By the way, the phone lines are open, 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. The question that I finally think I have a good answer to is how to address war, and specifically the question of military service. What do you do when someone says, hey, Junior is considering military service, what do you think? I am confident, finally, after years of struggle and anguish, I finally have a good answer, if not the answer, and here it is. Before enlisting in military service, read these two books. Read them. Read War is a Racket, published in 1935 by Smedley Darlington Butler, still one of the most decorated servicemen of American history. Smedley Butler served in all commissioned ranks. As he put it from his speech in 1933, I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service as a member of this country's most agile military force, the Marine Corps. I served in all commissioned ranks from second lieutenant to major general. And during that period, I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and for the bankers, speaking of Andrew Carnegie. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. I'm sure Paul in New Jersey, you know, has some thoughts on that. I think it's Fordism that he's talking about. It's certainly not free enterprise that he's referring to. It's these international gangsters that are creating and exploiting disparities around the world that he's referring to. Smedley Butler wrote War is a Racket, published in 1935. It's a short book. It has five chapters. The chapters are titled Chapter 1, War is a Racket, Chapter 2. So, first of all, he's an unimpeachable witness. Who's going to argue with a man who served in all commissioned ranks from second lieutenant to major general over the course of a 33-plus year military career? Hard to argue with that guy. Unimpeachable witness. Five chapters. Chapter 1, War is a Racket. Chapter 2, Who Makes the Profits? Chapter 3, Who Pays the Bills? Chapter 4, How to Smash the Racket? Chapter 5, To Hell with War. So focusing, well, first in Chapter 1, War is a Racket, he says, War is a racket. It always has been. Possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives. A racket is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of the people. Only a small inside group knows what it is about. It is conducted for the benefit of the very few at the expense of the very many. Out of a war, a few people make huge fortunes. Really, tell us about that. He does. In the World War, that was World War I, obviously, published in 1935. He's reflecting on his experience in World War I. In the World War, a mere handful garnered the profits of the conflict. At least 21,000 new millionaires and billionaires were made in the United States during the World War. So World War I. 21,000 new millionaires. Think about that. 100 years ago? 21,000 new millionaires and billionaires were made. How many do you suppose were created out of the $3 trillion that just gets sucked up over in the Middle East over the last decade plus? That many admitted their huge blood gains in their income tax returns. How many other war millionaires falsified their tax returns? No one knows. How many of these war millionaires shouldered a rifle? How many of them dug a trench? How many of them knew what it meant to go hungry in a rat-infested dugout? How many of them spent sleepless, frightened nights ducking shells and shrapnel and machine gun bullets? How many of them parried a bayonet thrust of an enemy? How many of them were wounded or killed in battle? Out of war, nations acquire additional territory. If they are victorious, they just take it. And again, you know, when you think of folks like, you know, I mean, General Wesley Clark told us that, folks like Donald Rumsfeld told him, No one's going to tell us who can bomb. You know, you have guys like Cheney, Rummy, and Wolfie as an extension of the warmongering oil cartel just going around and stealing resources around the world for themselves, essentially. You know, Dick Cheney, as defense secretary, has Halliburton, commissions Halliburton to do a study in the Middle East. Should we have contractors in the Middle East? You know, Dick Cheney of Halliburton. And then the Halliburton study obviously looks favorable on contractors in the Middle East. And suddenly Dick Cheney is, what was he, CEO after that? You know, speaking of the revolving power elite door or circle that C. Wright Mills talked about in the in his book, The Power Elite. Anyway, so like Smedley Butler wrote, out of war, nations acquire additional territory if they're victorious. They just take it. This newly acquired territory promptly is exploited by the few, the selfsame few who wrung dollars out of blood in the war. The general public shoulders the bill. And what is the bill? Anyway, that's from chapter one. Chapter four, though, brilliant. How to smash the racket. Well, it's a racket, all right, he wrote, old gimlet eye. A few profit and the many pay. But there is a way to stop it. You can end it by disarmament conferences. You can't end it by disarmament conferences. You can't eliminate it by peace parleys at Geneva. Well-meaning but impractical groups can't wipe out its resolutions. It can be smashed effectively only by taking the profit out of war. How do you do that? Listen, he told us very specifically, the only way to smash this racket is to conscript capital and industry and labor before the nation's manhood can be conscripted. What does he mean? 1 month before the government can conscript the young men of the nation, it must conscript capital and industry and labor. Let the officers and the directors and the high-powered executives of our armament factories and our munitions makers and our shipbuilders and our airplane builders and the manufacturers of all the other things that provide profit in wartime, as well as the bankers and the speculators, be conscripted to get $30 a month. And I think that should not be inflation adjusted personally. I think it should always be $30 a month, regardless of central banking, runaway inflation, and so on and so on. Let them all be conscripted to get $30 a month, as he wrote, the same wage as the lads in the trenches get. So what he's saying is everyone in the entire country makes what the lowest ranking servicemen make. Let the workers in these plants get the same wages. All the workers, all presidents, executives, directors, managers, bankers, yes, and all generals and admirals, officers and politicians, all government office holders, everyone in the nation be restricted to a total monthly income not to exceed that paid to the soldier in the trenches. Let all these kings and tycoons and masters of business and all those workers in industry and all our senators and governors and majors pay half of their monthly $30 wage to their families and pay war risk insurance and buy liberty bonds. Why shouldn't they? They aren't running any risk of being killed or having their bodies mangled or their minds shattered. They aren't sleeping in muddy trenches. They aren't hungry. The soldiers are. Give capital and industry and labor 30 days to think it over, and you will find by that time there will be no war. That will smash the racket. That and nothing else, Smedley Butler wrote. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. there. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard. Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. There's a video, speaking of Jordan Peterson, what is that? Jordan Peterson video, him, why can't I find that? That's odd. How he does what he does, basically. Why people listen. What the heck is it called? How to Get Respect Without Being a Bully. That's what it's titled. Charisma on Command is the name of the channel. And YouTube. Kind of, you know, analyzing how Jordan Peterson talks to people. And I admire that, you know, how he – and the central – concept is, you know, again, back to what Florence Kennedy said, Sherry Randolph quoting her in her book, Florence Flo Kennedy, The Life of a Radical Black Feminist, the dehumanization of people. I mentioned Paulo Freire and Pedagogy of the Oppressed regularly. I think that, you know, bad guys are notorious for creating a problem and being able to articulate it very well and then offering us a disingenuous solution. It's like, you know, getting you addicted to pot and then saying, well, you know, you're addicted to this and that's bad, but, you know, and so you're lethargic and sluggish. You should be able to do whatever you want, I suppose, particularly in your own you know, time or whatever, but read, what is the chapter in Ralph Epperson's The Unseen Hand? What is it? Marijuana, the Communist Drug. Is that what it's titled? Anyway, you should read that if you're not familiar. Is that the chapter I want to say? Anyway, the Communist Drug. Just look that up, marijuana, the Communist Drug. You'll see what I'm talking about. So it's like bad guys saying, well, you're addicted to this, but you know what? You're lethargic. Maybe you should do a few lines of coke and then you'll have some energy. No, that's not a good solution. That's not a good idea. So bad guys are notorious for creating a problem. Therefore, they're very good at articulating the problem because they created it. They thoughtfully, you know, crafted it, engineered it. And all of that. And then they offer a disingenuous solution. So Paulo Freire does a great job of articulating the problem in Pedagogy of the Oppressed, the oppressor-oppressed paradigm. But I'm not a Marxist and I don't agree with his so-called solution. But he does a brilliant job of articulating the problem. I think similarly of Hayek's Road to Serfdom. And I think that, you know, Lark's admonition or caution or warning there is well observed, and you know, go research the Pilgrims. See, for example, you know, the Pilgrims' involvement in the 9/11 Commission, you know, and the New York families when Henry Kissinger shows up, and they say, the families ask Henry Kissinger, hey, is there anything you want to tell us before we get started? You know, like, do you have any clients, maybe Middle Eastern, maybe Saudi, that you want to tell us about? And you do a little bit of digging, and you discover that basically the Pilgrims were sort of the central theme in the 9/11 Commission, a central theme, if not the central theme. So that's, you know, unfortunate. Kissinger and Keane, his replacement, you know, Pilgrim Society guys. So whatever. Anyway, back to the question. I need to get to the point, you know, two books. When someone asks, hey, military service, yes or no? My answer now is I hope that you are sober-minded enough to consider the fact that you or your loved one are about to sign your life away, essentially, possibly literally. You're considering signing up for service that may include the loss of your life. Even if you're signing up for a cushy desk job, that doesn't mean there are no guarantees in the military. And then there's the issue of the experimentation on military personnel that's gone on for decades. Really, that's always happening in some fashion, whether it's biological or psychological or whatever. The military is notorious for experimenting on its personnel. But you're considering signing your life away, possibly literally. Hopefully you have the attention span to read two books before you do that. I'll talk more about that when we come back. Stick around more right after this break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health,
More doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hi, folks. CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Sort of addressing the question. Let me back up a little bit. And actually, before I run away from the subject, sort of, not really, but you know, I mentioned the Pilgrim Society. There's an article from 2008. The Pilgrim Society, a study of the Anglo-American establishment. It's pretty cool. Institute for the Study of Globalization and Covert Politics, ISGP-studies.com. It's an interesting article, and John T. Whiteford asking the question, very reasonable questions in his 1940 pamphlet, Sir Uncle Sam, Knight of the British Empire. Very interesting article. Everyone should read it. This is sort of companion. Part one, the Pilgrims Network, the WASP elite. I can hear Renee now. Pilgrims history, the Pilgrims Network, banks, law firms, insurance, and other business, U.S. media, one, print and television, U.S. media, two, CIA's Operation Mockingbird and Washington ties, British media and MI5, MI6 infiltration, universities and fraternities, cultural, scientific, and revolutionary societies, religion, Templar and Masonic orders, big interests and major think tanks, Rockefeller, Morgan, and other big interests in Great Britain, State Department, early Pentagon ties. What do you mean early? As in we created it? Yeah. National security advisors and elite grooming. I've mentioned it several times. Look at the list of national security advisors. It's basically synonymous. So national security advisors. I was asked yesterday, you know, look at the list of national security advisors. That's another thing, you know, that's anathema to the Constitution and, you know, an unbroken thread of pilgrims, so to speak. I was asked yesterday, what do you think, Donald Trump? Is he a monkey wrench? I said, no, he's a monkey, just another monkey. Look at the people he surrounded himself with. And, you know, when you have a revolving door of corrupt billionaire types and warmongering, you know, John Bolton, Gina Haspel, John Brennan types, just a revolving door of these where, you know, so basically you're going to, where's the argument that by surrounding yourself with corrupt, profiteering, authoritarian tyrants, that by doing that, you're going to somehow achieve redemption or some kind of noble goal. It's, you know, a chimerical notion, as they say. Anyway, that's an interesting article. The Pilgrim Society, a study of the Anglo-American establishment. I recommend it. But you'll see specifically in that article, well, let's see, 192 matches for Henry Kissinger. This article has been updated recently too, by the way. But, you know, you'll see a list of members, appendix H, key U.S. Canadian pilgrims into the 21st century. Some names that you probably recognize: Zbigniew Brzezinski, Prescott Bush, Jonathan Colby, Elbridge Colby, Richard N. Haass, you know, the CFR guy, Alexander Haig, Richard Holbrooke, Thomas Keane, and Henry Kissinger, speaking of the 9/11 Commission, John Lehman, Robert McNamara, Pete Peterson, Senator Claiborne Pell, remember him, the Pell Grant guy? Remember I told you back in the 70s, I think it was 75, that Claiborne Pell said, hey, since we can control the weather and create hurricanes and things like that, we don't need treaties anymore. Senator Claiborne Pell, Pilgrim Society member. General David Petraeus, David Rockefeller, naturally. Donald Rumsfeld, naturally. George Shultz, Paul Volcker, Caspar Weinberger, John Whitehead, James Wolfenson, James Woolsey, on and on. Anyway, that's an Easter egg, if you want to call it. I hate that kind of stuff, but just a little parenthetical aside, the Pilgrim Society, a study of the Anglo-American establishment. You know, Henry Kissinger. Hey, Mr. Kissinger, you want to tell us anything? You know, like your Middle Eastern clients, your Saudi clients? Since 15 of 19 alleged hijackers were, we all agree, at least 15 of them were Saudis. You want to tell us anything, like your Saudi clients? Any of them have the last name Bin Laden by chance? Oh yeah, let me recuse myself. But here's Tom Keene, a fellow Pilgrim Society member. Unbelievable. Anyway, the books and then to the phones. The two books, when someone says, hey, I'm considering military service, loved one or whatever, please, please have the attention span to read two books. The first is Smedley Butler's War as a Racket. As I said, it's short. You can find it online. You can read it in an hour or two, even if you're a slow reader like me. Read War as a Racket. Then, to me, the companion to it is Endless Enemies, The Making of an Unfriendly World. When Fred in Michigan called in on Friday, he said, you know, that I have mentioned several times that from the comments on the Amazon reviews, there are 26 to date that I'm aware of, 26 reviews on Amazon of Jonathan Quitney's Endless Enemies. I was planning on reading them today. I will read them tomorrow probably. And people say there are a couple of comments in particular that mention, you know, getting the first edition hardcover. And you can actually get it for about $50. I think less even. And so I would recommend getting both copies for reasons that I will probably talk about tomorrow. Read them both. One or the other is probably sufficient. And you going through the comments on Amazon, the reviews, you hear things like, this book was so shocking. I pride myself in finishing books, but this book was so shocking, I couldn't finish it. It was so horrifying and upsetting and discouraging because of what we're led to believe in the public eye versus what's actually happening. It was so shocking that I couldn't finish the book. My hope is people will come away after reading it with a sober view of this feigned patriotism that we're fed from cradle to grave. So those are the two books, Smedley Butler's War as a Racket, published in 1935, and Jonathan Quitney's Endless Enemies, The Making of an Unfriendly World, published originally in 1984. I think the second edition was 1986. You know, and again, which one, which edition? Both. First edition hardcover and second edition paperback, I think both. I believe these two books, or three perhaps, you know, if it's both editions of Quitney's Endless Enemies, are a sufficient subject matter primer on the supremely repugnant racket that is war. I believe these two resources stand alone and need no further comment, really, or clarification. They also effectively lead the curious reader off into a plethora of ancillary and related directions. You know, I mean, from there, all of the stuff that's happened. You know, someone said nothing was happening. You know, we didn't have wars and stuff. Nothing was happening from 78 to 1990. I was like, what? What are you talking about? You got Iran-Contra. You've got, I mean, so many things happening. And, you know, Quitney documents a lot of that stuff in Endless Enemies extensively. Anyway, so they, you know, and there's The Business Plot, Smedley Butler, 1935, you know, and again, John Spivak's article series was great for that. The best, I would say. So these two lead the curious reader off into a plethora of ancillary and related directions, subjects, and supported cast and characters. So that's that. Those two books are the answer. And if you don't have the attention span to read two books before you sign up to perhaps give your life away, I don't know what to tell you. And I tried to keep it brief with RL33627, the Congressional Research Service report, NATO and Afghanistan, a test to the Transatlantic Alliance, which tells us exactly what's going on. But, you know, that seemed lackluster to people. So I say these two books before you consider military service. And the connection to Friday, by the way, reading about Michael Hastings, is that he blew the whistle on the racket, so to speak. So that's the connection from then to today. Hopefully that makes sense. To the phones, John in Tennessee, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Chris. You know, you touched on so much today. My mind has been racing with memories from a long time ago. For instance, Smedley Butler talking about men's minds being shattered. I can remember being 13 or 14 years old visiting a veterans home and having a probably 70-plus-year-old man report to me like I was a general. And the look in his eyes and the look on his face when he reported Private So-and-so reporting as ordered, sir. And I knew even at that age that he was reliving World War One. You know, and we're being, if there is anyone listening that hasn't seen the face and the eyes of a broken man, I'm not saying to go out and look for it, but it will be indelible. It'll be a permanent memory that you'll carry with you for a long time. You know, you're talking about all of this that's going on with manipulation and other things that have come to mind. I'm almost reeling, Chris, when I think about how war is glorified, be an army of one, be one of the few, the proud, the Marines, and then watch, like I did, my brother-in-law get his arm blown off. And actually has a photograph of General Westmoreland trying to shake a right arm that was newly sewn back on and in traction to present him with a medal. Knowing it was a photo opportunity, he couldn't shake his hand because that arm had been blown off. You know, then looking at the Medal of Honor, has anyone ever really looked at the Medal of Honor? The upside down, five-pointed star, with the face of so-called Lady Liberty or the Goddess of War on it for doing great things during time of warfare. Yeah. Chris, we're living in this upside down, backwards. You know, as Christians, we hear about calling bitter sweet and sweet bitter and exchanging evil for good and good for evil. It's been going on forever, folks. Yep. It's nothing new. And we're sending our sons and daughters and being proud of them because they want to enlist. But yet they're adults, so daddy can't tell them, don't do that. I mean, you can. You're not going to stop them. They've got to come to their own understanding. So when someone asks me, what do you think about your child or my child or anyone's child going to war? I'd say it's to be as avoided as university, because universities and war will destroy your children. Period. End of story. Yeah. I'm not against education. But when you send your kids to school and you get them back 4 years later and they're not the young men and women that you sent, the values that you've tried to instill are gone because of their higher education.
Yeah.
Chris, we're living in a sick world.
Yep. And so, I mean, to your point, when you come, I think, you know, if this would do anything, these two books present the sobering reality of what's actually happening, you know, what the weapons of war are actually being used to do. And so hopefully when that shocking reality settles in, then people realize that this call to war, you know, this be all you can be nonsense, is patently un-American. If we look back to our roots, so to speak, what we're seeing, what we're hearing is patently un-American. I also, speaking of Smedley Butler, you know, just as an aside, I wanted to point out that he mentions in chapter 4, you know, patrolling only, you know, he says the ships of our Navy, it can be seen, should be specifically limited by law to within 200 miles of our coastline. Had that been the law in 1898, the Maine would never have gone to Havana Harbor. She never would have been blown up. And so from there, you skip forward to Patrick Clausen's, you know, quippy little, I frankly think that conflict initiation is, crisis initiation is really tough. And then, you know, he talks about the Maine. You may remember, you know, we didn't go to war with Spain until the USS Maine exploded. You know, it's all a setup.
Not to mention that we're the ones that did it.
Exactly. You know, and that's what Patrick Clausen is saying. Yeah.
Harvard had blown up in Miami and been blamed on the Cubans. So, I mean, and that's the thing. This is coming from a guy, Chris, you know, in case anyone isn't listening or isn't aware. I enlisted during Vietnam. I wanted to go kill the commies until I began to realize, you know, when I came out and I had my awakening and I'm going, well, gee, compartmentalization seems like a good idea when you're in the military. I don't want to know what I don't need to know, and what I do know, sometimes I don't want to know. But the compartmentalization is there so that people with the ability to think might say, if they had the access to the understanding, would say, what are you, crazy? I'm not doing that. Now you got a revolt, or now you got some kind of insubordination because people are saying, wait a minute, they didn't do this. You did. And now you're sending me to fix your foible, to lay my life down, or take someone's life that I don't know, that hasn't done anything to me, didn't even have the ability. You know, we've heard in the Middle East, they hate us for our freedom. Well, I'm sorry, but when a guy's house gets blown away with every strong desert windstorm, he is of no threat to me.
Yep.
He's too busy picking up the rubble from his house and finding a goat to milk or eat. They can't come get us.
If we're going to be honest, speaking of Madison Avenue, if there is a hatred for freedom, it's the so-called freedom to, as Donald Rumsfeld says, nobody's going to tell us who we can bomb. You know, it's the freedom, so-called, to bomb and shoot and steal from whomever you like. That's the freedom that anyone would hate. And Jonathan Quitney in Endless Enemies, Making of an Unfriendly World, makes it very clear, you know, that's the issue.
Well, they buy into this whole manifest destiny deal. You know, we're the chosen ones. We're supposed to do this. Well, the Constitution is a great document, I suppose. Why isn't it great for everybody? Why is it only so-called American citizens that have the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? Why doesn't it apply to other countries? You know, we're not going to be nation building. No, we're not nation building. We never have been nation building, Mr. Bush. We've been nation destroying, nation tearing down. We're not building them up. You know, you have the right to keep and bear arms. But some guy in Afghanistan is able to carry the weapons that we bought that we're not allowed to carry that we bought. We can't have them here because we're not to be trusted. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Utterly inane.
Anyway, I'll make room. Good to be
back.
Thanks,
John. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Always good to hear from you. There's more. I'll hold it to tomorrow. I haven't even, speaking of warmongering, I haven't gotten to John McCain. I'll hold that until tomorrow. But, you know, I don't want to speak ill of him in passing and out of respect for his family. But, you know, I'll get to that tomorrow. Back to the phones. Harvey in Florida, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hello, Chris. What a wonderful, wonderful program you have today. Very important material you bring to the American people, as always. Wonderful.
I really do. It would be a dream to see people understand that what we are being conscripted to is patently un-American. It really is, I believe.
Well, it should be, but unfortunately, that's my whole life. That's what I've been seeing. The war, more wars, and more wars for a handful of greedy scumbags. Excuse my expression. You know, I never heard of Smedley Butler till I was about 50 years old. I had a guest on my radio program several times, Mark Learman. And he introduced me to the writings of Smedley Butler and the knowledge about Smedley Butler. And I know we're very short on time, so I'll call you back another day. The other day, you were cut off, not me. If it came back to the airwaves on Thursday, they must have not liked what we were saying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The only time we ever needed the American military was at 9/11, 2001, and of course they were nowhere to be found.
Isn't that funny?
The bottom line.
Yeah. $1 trillion a year, you know, unparalleled force in all of history, somehow thwarted by, you know, a bunch of goofballs with box cutters. Sure.
It's unbelievable. It was the only time we ever needed them, and they were nowhere to be seen. They were on stand down because Cheney put them on stand down.
Yep.
And I'd like to see Henry Kissinger with one of those pilgrim hats. You think he came over on the Mayflower?
Yeah.
I thought he came from Germany not too long ago. Unbelievable. You couldn't make this stuff up, my friend. I'll talk to you another day. Thank you, Chris. Thanks. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Harvey. Appreciate it, as always. This is serious business, folks. You know, I've been pointing at John Adams talking about James Otis for a while. I really think, you know, John Adams told us, hey, this is how it happened. This is how it happened quickly. This is how people were united. And that's what makes sense. You know, kind of what John was just saying. Does this apply to everyone or just a few people? And, you know, so this concept of hard power, soft power, smart power is always in view, you know, going around the world. A few, as Harvey put it, a few greedy scumbags, you know, basically conscripting the unwitting masses, you know, as Nesta Webster put it, in World Revolution, The Plot Against Civilization, published back in 1921, it is difficult to write of these things calmly to deceive the people whose simple faith and lack of education prevent them seeing whither they're being led is as cowardly as to guide a blind man into a ditch. This is what's happening. And it's not just that. There can't, you know, these simple people these people whose simple faith and lack of education prevent them seeing whither they're being led. You know, I put that together with John Adams' dissertation on the canon and feudal law. These people whose simple faith and lack of education prevent them seeing that they're being led to led or driven blindfolded to irretrievable destruction, as John Adams put it in his dissertation on the canon and feudal law. We need to come to our senses. Think about how awful it is that we are condoning, whether implicitly or explicitly, this kind of stuff that is completely antithetical to the founding precepts, if you will, our founding documents, you know, again, the words of James Madison specifically. I've said it before, and this might sound cliche at this point, but, you know, it's like someone went point for point through James Madison's speech at the Constitutional Convention, June 29, 1877, and said, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. Madison says, this is a bad idea, this is a bad idea, bad idea, bad idea. And so we have gone through that list and adopted these bad ideas point for point. Washington's farewell address, love them, hate them, same thing. You read the Declaration of Independence and that list of facts, you know, facts submitted to a candid world. We've gone through that again, haven't we? Anyway, I hope it was informative, and I'll sort of continue on in a sort of unorthodox fashion, you might say. Tomorrow we'll continue on from here. But those are the two books. I hope people read them: War is a Racket and Endless Enemies. Hope was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. And we'll catch you on the other side.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that...
Hey, gang.